Do you have any vinyl? Record albums are back in fashion after nearly being wiped out by digital music formats. But that's only one surprise in the fascinating history of LPs and the story of how recorded music came to be ubiquitous in our lives. It's the subject of the new book, Into the Groove, The Story of Sound from Tinfoil to Vinyl by Jonathan Scott. Jonathan is a music journalist and record collector, and he joins us now to share five of his big ideas.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan Scott, and I write about and collect records. I love talking to people about their relationship with music. My last book, The Vinyl Frontier, was all about the Voyager Golden Record, essentially an interstellar mixtape for aliens, and my latest, Into the Groove, begins 100 years earlier and tells the story of recorded sound from tinfoil to vinyl. I'm going to share five insights or epiphanies that I had during my research. Insight number one. The past is a fascinating place to visit, and we all can. This is such an exciting time for anyone with interest in early sound. Thanks to the work of pioneering scientists and academics at the likes of Project Irene and firstsounds.org, thousands of hours of audio, digitized from the fragile grooves of rare, old and often unplayable media, are available to all. Try the Library of Congress's National Jukebox, the First Sounds website, or the Cylinder Audio Archive at the University of California, Santa Barbara. My personal favourite, which you can find by searching simply Crystal Palace 1888, was recorded on a warm summer's afternoon in London. There was a Handel Festival taking place that summer, and Edison's UK cheerleader, a mustachioed colonel with a gift for publicity, sat in the press gallery with Edison's latest phonograph and a box of cylinders. He recorded several thousand voices performing Israel in Egypt. This is the earliest recorded, surviving recording of a live musical performance. It sounds terrible. It sounds like a mic wrapped in a blanket has been dropped in a pond. But it's exactly this that makes it so powerful. You can hear that somewhere in its murky depths is something very beautiful, but far off and inaccessible. It's like putting your ear to the door of 1888. You can imagine you're late, hurrying through the park towards the venue, and you can hear the music you're missing as you approach. Insight number two. In the 1890s, every record was a one-off. We're used to having music at our beck and call and take it completely for granted. Part of my vision for the book was to strip away some of the entitlement we all feel around music and revel in the ingenuity of the groove. The recording industry really got going in the 1890s. The second generation phonographs, by now playing cylinders of wax, slowly transitioned from being office aid devices aimed at the business community to purveyors of audio entertainment. However, to begin with, there was no way of mass producing a recording, so to sell 100 copies of The Mockingbird, for example, the pioneering hitmaker John York Attlee, a government clerk by day, honey-voiced whistler by night, he had to record the thing 100 times. Every single copy was a unique artifact. Just think of that. Imagine going up to the Cure and saying, "Could I have two Just Like Heavens and a Boys Don't Cry, please?" Insight number three. Before 1925, all recording was acoustic. Sound historians divide up popular music into four distinct eras: acoustic, electric, magnetic, and digital. To make a sound recording prior to 1925, there was no volume or tone control. Instrumentalists and singers performed in front of a horn, which funneled sound waves toward a thin diaphragm, which vibrated an attached stylus, etching the sound onto the rotating surface. To make it louder, you sang louder, or got closer to the horn. Certain voices, certain instruments, simply didn't translate well in the limited frequency range of the acoustic period. Nevertheless, search Caruso 1902 or Nellie Melba 1904, and you'll find that there's a magic to the acoustic era. Finally, for an interesting before and after compare and contrast exercise, I recommend searching Rhapsody in Blue, Paul Whiteman, 1924, and Rhapsody in Blue, Paul Whiteman, 1927, as these give you an insight into the importance of the electric microphone. The microphone gave engineers a fine brush, enabling them to fill the grooves with ever richer detail. Voices and instruments unsuited to the acoustic recordings were set free. Insight number four. The first 7-inch was pressed in green vinyl. Many of us think of coloured vinyl and picture discs as a modern thing. In fact, coloured vinyl has been with us right from the start of the story. The modern 33 RPM LP made its debut in New York in 1948, showing off the 20 minutes per side runtime of Columbia's new microgrooves. The following year, RCA launched their competing 45 RPM 7-inch disc, kicking off the so-called War of the Speeds. To start with, they colour-coded their releases. Country releases were green, children's records were yellow, classical red, pop was black, R&B orange, international on light blue, and musicals on midnight blue. The very first 45 RPM 7-inch disc was a yellow record with Pee-wee the Piccolo, pressed on the 7th of December 1948. But the first to be released was Texarkana Baby by Eddie Arnold on green vinyl. Insight number five. Your record collection contains so much more than music. Records are not only your taste in music. They are a diary, a snapshot of your life. They are bound up with your loves, passions, friendships, your time and memory. Now, I write about family history, and I've come to realise that there's lots of common ground between genealogy and record collecting. My copy of Not Fade Away by the Rolling Stones is worthless by all modern standards of vinyl collecting lore. It's so scratched as to be virtually unplayable. But it's priceless to me simply because it has my mother's handwriting on the sleeve, and it reminds me not only of her, but also a hilarious conversation, a moment in time when I was in my 20s and I was talking to her about her first records, and she described the Stones as dishy and dangerous. So many records have a story. First records, records given for a birthday, records passed on by a beloved aunt, sister, father or friend, or those bought from a particular place or at a particular time in your life. These stories are important to preserve. After all, you don't take your collection with you, you're just its custodian. And one day they will pass on to your family. And if you don't tell someone what the records mean to you, what family stories they represent, they may disappear forever. I hope you enjoy my book.
Thank you, Jonathan. That was five big ideas from Into the Groove, the story of sound from tinfoil to vinyl by Jonathan Scott. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.